Hi there, folks, and welcome. Welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again. And this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Native Shark, which is an online platform for learning Japanese. And what Native Shark do is they make learning Japanese really, really simple. So you just show up, click a button that says study now, and the platform will then show you exactly what you need to learn next based on your progression. Now, this may sound simple, and in practice it is, but the way it's designed means that students who use Native Shark once a day for 4 to 5 months can complete the equivalent of over 2 years of university study. And what they're also unique in is that they teach all of the types of Japanese that you wouldn't normally get in traditional schools or textbooks. And if you've ever studied with one of the more common textbooks that foreigners usually pick up, you've probably noticed that there are a lot of sentences or conversations in there that you'd never really hear in real life, and vice versa. Some of the stuff you actually hear when you're out and about in Japan is never really covered in these traditional textbooks. So this isn't the case with Native Shark. It's very well grounded in everyday spoken Japanese, whether it's casual or formal language. And you can really expect, like one of the students writes in their reviews, you can really expect to be picking up the sort of little nuances that no one would expect a non-native speaker to use. And that's pretty rare for most Japanese courses. So yeah, really, really useful platform. And since you've heard about it here on the podcast, you also get an extra little bonus. If you sign up using the URL nativeshark.com/NTI, we'll link to it in this episode's show notes. That's native without an E, so N-A-T-I-V shark, all one word, .com/NTI. Use that link to sign up and you'll get a double length free trial. So 2 weeks free instead of the one. And you can sign up for that free trial without having to put any credit card or anything of the sort in there. So give it a go. You won't regret it. All right. So we're back to our Wednesday Clubhouse room. This one was recorded a couple of months ago during Golden Week. So we were still a bit in the dark as far as vaccinations are concerned, as you'll hear in the recording. And I'm pleased to report that these are finally being rolled out. We're up to about 20% of the population to date fully vaccinated, with about 30% having already received their first shot. I've personally got mine booked for tomorrow, actually. So things are finally looking up here in the land of the rising sun. And from people's experience, once the few initial setbacks were worked through, things are now actually progressing quite smoothly. So we still don't know when the skies will open up again and when people will be able to enter the country freely, but we should at least be able to finally get out there and have a few drinks with friends or a night out on the town in a month or two, fingers crossed. So on this particular day, we took quite a few questions from a couple of very active members of the audience. And that in turn kicked off a bunch of very interesting conversations on various topics. So we're talking about buying properties and putting them under children's names at first, which of course brings up the topic of gift or inheritance tax. Then we get into some other taxes, running costs, the advantages and disadvantages of investing in Japan, and how investment strategies here are different than they are in other countries. A whole lot of talk about bank loans and mortgages, either for owners, occupiers, or investors, which are, of course, mainly available to residents. And then we also talk about owning versus renting, living in a mixed home investment property scenario, borrowing to live versus borrowing for investment, and other creative scenarios. And we've got Emil Gorgis, the Tokyo family home and mortgage master, Matt Ketchum, the Akiya guru, with us once again, and yours truly. So really nice, long conversation. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side.
So, yeah, thank you, everyone, for joining. This is A Foreigner's Guide to Buying Real Estate in Japan. We host this every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. My name's Emil. I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. Foreigners purchase their own family home in Tokyo, and we also arrange financing. So we work with the banks. So any questions you have about financing or the real estate purchase process for your personal home, I can help you with that. And then I'll just hand over to Ziv and Matt, the other moderators in this room, and they can quickly do an introduction of themselves, and then we can get on to your question, Lana. And we also have Abdias, I think I'm pronouncing it right, in the room. So, yeah, if you have any questions you want to ask, please also raise your hand and we can bring you up to speak. But Ziv, please go ahead and do your introduction.
Thanks, Emil. So my name is Ziv. I've been in Japan for going on 9 years now, and we've had our business for about 10 years now, which is a property investment consultancy. So we're buyer advocates and portfolio managers and people who live in Japan or out of Japan and speak English or Italian or French or Hebrew. We provide them with services to research and do due diligence, negotiate, buy, sell if they want to at some stage, and also manage their portfolios anywhere in Japan.
All right, thank you. I'm Matt. I am the co-founder of Aki and Inaka. We help clients dig through all of the dirty data about abandoned properties in Japan. We are buyer's reps, and we take them through the due diligence process all the way to closing on rural vacant / abandoned properties across Japan.
Great, thanks. Okay, cool. So, Svetlana, please, usually we also have Tracy Milk up. She's the admin Papa Queen. She helps us answer questions about any short-term stays. She's not available to join us right now, but she's also usually one of the four co-hosts we have regularly in this room. Svetlana, sorry, go ahead. You were saying in your question you're looking to buy an investment property for your son.
Yes. So I was thinking to buy, but the owner should be my son, not me. And he is 16 years old, and I want, neither me nor my husband can influence this property, so it should be only like my son's one. So that was my question, and I wanted to buy it with loan, not cash. And but the bank told me that I can't do it. So I can only be the owner. So who pays the loan? He or she is the owner of the place, actually. So yes. So because like in Russia, we can do it. We can like nominate any owner. We can do it on kids under kids' name, but still we can pay. So in Japan, it seems impossible, right? Like in general.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. When it's a loan, the bank in. So I'm from Australia, and you know we can do sort of similar things to some degree. No, that's not the case. So, as you said, whoever is paying the loan is the person who should be the owner. I think from the bank's perspective, if they are loaning you money and you decide to stop paying or something happens to you and you can no longer pay, they want to get the house back, but it's not your house. It's your son's property. So how are they meant to get it back? So that's why... you know, it's the way it is. Whoever is paying the loan needs to be the owner, or rather, whoever the bank is giving the loan to should be the owner because they're seeing you on your ability to pay. Then you need to think. The other thing you need to think is, okay, why should it be under your son's name and not your name? Or alternatively, why? You be sort of joint owners. Also, you know, he can be a part owner. You can buy it under your name. You can get the loan. That's fine. And put your son as a part owner. One thing you do need to be careful of is, I don't know the specific details, but I have heard it discussed in the past when we arrange home loans is about the gift tax. So if you're paying for all of it, this is just with a typical married couple, right? So let's say if they have a child and that the wife is not working, he's a full-time mum. If the wife is given 50% of the property, even though she's not paying it off, the tax office may say, well, that's a gift. You're gifting her 50% of the property, right? So, and I feel that could be a similar situation. Even if you were to put it part of it in your son's name, if he's not actually paying for it, technically it's a gift. So you may want to speak with an accountant about the gift tax, how that works.
And that's pretty high in Japan from what I hear.
Yeah, I understand it. Yes, and okay. And the next question is about taxes and like if I'm going to rent it, to give it to rent, this apartment or something, so I have to pay property tax, right? And Kandihin is a maintenance fee. and plus, plus, plus. So this actually also stops me, because it means that if I don't have any tenant for like 6 months or something like that, that it will be like out of my budget, right? So it will be also my expenses to pay like kandrihi and maintenance fee and like property tax and like other electricity, all these expenses.
Yes, that's correct. And that's why we do due diligence before we purchase properties, to understand exactly what we can expect from them rental-wise, vacancy-wise, and with all of these expenses. But that's not really different to anywhere else in the world. I mean, property tax, and if you're buying a unit in a condominium block, then you'll also have monthly building fees. That's the case anywhere. So what you normally do is you assume, based on the area, you can assume what your vacancy is going to be. And there are, of course, some things that you can do to try and reduce vacancies and increase occupancy and make the property more attractive. And then you take into consideration that it's going to be vacant a certain percentage of the time, and you want to make sure that your cash flow and your yield works even with those assumptions. And that's all things that you do in the deal analysis phase, so before you actually buy the property.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I understand it too. So yeah, I just need some more time to think it over, and also now. So what about the prices now during this corona thing? I know like many places they are open and they can't find tenants, and all this kind of real estate thing is not working quite good now. So what are you thinking, guys, about all of this and your prognosis or something about future in Japan in terms of real estate?
Well, from an investment perspective, and I'll let Emil answer on his field of expertise, which is family home. But from an investment perspective, what we're seeing now is we're not seeing a much larger number of vacancies. But when we do get a vacancy, it can be a lot longer. And that's mainly, I mean, both are two sides of the same coin. Because of the pandemic, people are not feeling comfortable to leave their home. So people who want to relocate are postponing that if they can. And on the other hand, when they do leave, it's also harder to get a new tenant in there. But the upside of the entire pandemic situation is that property prices, especially in Tokyo and Osaka, are a lot softer now. So we're seeing prices and yields that we haven't seen in the 4 or 5 years prior to that period. So it is very much a buyer's market now. And on the residential front, at least, it hasn't been really affecting yields. It has been affecting yields to some degree in the commercial sector, but not so much residential. Residential has actually picked up in popularity since the pandemic started, because it's considered to be a safe and stable asset. Especially in Japan, where there are no massive layoffs, people always need a place to live, and residential properties are now considered the safer asset. They're always considered more safe and stable, but now that's even more attractive to investors. As for the future, that's really anyone's guess. I mean, I'm hoping we'll start seeing vaccines and things going back to normal towards the end of the year, but I don't know. Japan is it's really slow in that regard, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you. I will think, and maybe I will ask for some consultation, and to like further, I will think about it. Thank you very much for your answers.
No worries. Thanks for asking, Svetlana. And I will sort of touch on what you said in a second, but I'll just do a quick reset. We've got a few other people joining. So Maya, Abdias, Aya, and Raledo. Yeah, please, if you guys have any questions about real estate in Japan, feel free to raise your hand and ask us a question. You know, myself, Ziv, and Matt, between the three of us, should be able to have enough experience to answer most of your questions related to real estate in Japan. We're all in the real estate field. So yeah, please do just push the hand raise icon at the bottom of your screen, and we can bring you up. Svetlana, I do want, look, lots of people ask about real estate investing. And they ask about, well, what's a good price? And then they talk about sort of, you know, taxes and management costs, etc. And it seems to be sometimes, from what they say, I feel they don't really have a good understanding of the whole picture. They've got some bits and pieces here and there, but it's not really a solid picture in their mind. And also, what we have in, you know, I think you said you're from Russia. I'm from Australia myself. I don't know what the market is in Russia, but in Australia and many other countries, we invest for capital growth. We buy the property at $100,000, and we expect every year it's going to increase in value. It's going to grow in value, and that's where I make my money. I buy it at $100,000, and it's worth $200,000. Yeah. Okay. That's not the strategy in Japan. The strategy in Japan is you're going to get a good rental yield. Let's say 5%. I mean, you know, it can be a little bit less. It can be a little bit more. Depends on where you go. But let's just use 5% as an example. You buy a 10 million yen, $100,000 property, and even though the property is not going to go up a lot, there's not a lot of capital growth in Japan, but then again, there's not a lot of drops. Historically, it's been pretty flat. That's why it's pretty secure, but it's quite stable. But where you see the investment aspect is the monthly rental return is about, you know, let's say 5%, for example. You know, you can get a little bit higher, but that's what it is. It's a nice, safe, secure investment, and you're going to get a good return. Even if you consider the monthly management fees and the repair fund fees and the land tax, right, and some of the vacancy periods and maintenance, you're still going to get a good, solid return on it. Also, the interest rates are very low. So that's the strategy in Japan, is you buy it for... as an investment tool that gives you nice, stable income, a good return on your investment in terms of cash flow, monthly cash flow, not capital growth speculation.
Yeah, I understand. Thank you. That's important because, I've been living in Japan for 15 years, but still, for many things, I have, like, mindset of, like, Russian property or like Russian business, something like that. And I have to remind myself to switch my mindset sometimes and to see it from another perspective. That's actually very interesting as a solid investment. And yeah, in general, in the end, you have an apartment without any loan left, like after 20 or 25 years, right?
Yeah, well, it depends. Well, investment loan is different to personal home.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah, but it could be an investment loan. Maybe the bank will give you 80% financing, 60 to 80% financing. Interest rate might be about 2%.
So okay. You mean investment loan and jitaku loan is different? They're different loans here?
Yes, because like jitaku is a home loan, personal home loan, and that's where you get the 0.5%, 0.7% interest rate. We just signed a home loan contract yesterday, and it's 0.67% is the home loan interest rate. But if you would like an investment loan, and that's almost 100% financing, if you'd like an investment loan, it's going to be more like 60 to 80% financing. And so you need to put a 20 to 40% deposit, and the interest rate will be closer to 2%, if not a little bit higher. Investment loans are not as attractive as home loans.
So you mean if I take jitaku loan, like home loan, I cannot give it to rent, for rent?
Technically, no.
Okay, I got it. Thank
you. That's why no worries. And that's why you can only have one jitaku loan. So, for example, if you own your current house.
Yeah, we own it and we have this jitaku loan in Yokohama.
Yeah, you have jitaku loan. So let's say you want to buy another house in Yokohama.
Mm-hmm.
The bank will say, okay, we can give you a new jitaku loan, but you have to sell your first loan. You have to sell your first house. And you say, can I keep both?
Okay.
And you say, well, how many jitaku loans do you want? How many homes? Which one is going to be your primary home? Right? Yeah, so you can't just get multiple home loans.
Okay.
At the home loan rate, yeah.
Thank you.
No worries. Is it anyone else who'd like to come up? Hey, Maya, have you in the audience? And Aya and Yuki-san. Anyone else would like to come up and ask a question? Feel free to ask. Feel free to raise your hand and come up. Or Zib or Matt, if you have anything else you guys would like to contribute, feel free.
I just wanted to add to what Svetlana was saying before. I think another major difference between Japan and... I don't know if all countries, but most other countries, is that the the tenants here and also the companies that you deal with on a regular basis, so the property management companies and the building management companies and even the insurance companies and so forth, they're all very, very hassle-free. So where in another country you would be dealing with dodgy tenants, people that have payment issues or people that refuse to leave when they're supposed to leave, or companies that sort of forget to communicate with you properly and then reach into your pocket and charge you more than they needed to charge. That sort of thing doesn't really happen here, or very, very rarely happens here. So another attraction of the market is for investment is the fact that it's a very hassle-free, headache-free type of market compared with other countries. And the other thing, which doesn't maybe apply to Tokyo necessarily, but to any other parts of the country, is that it's a lot more affordable than it is in other countries. So you can actually buy properties here starting from $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 for some of these smaller, older condo units, which is just not achievable in other countries.
What about, yeah, I was thinking about cheaper ones too, but I always have some doubts in terms of earthquakes. I mean, old buildings are old buildings, right? And then you have to pay huge insurance cost for this earthquake, like damage or something.
Well, insurance here is actually very, very cheap. Even for
extremely cheap.
Yeah, even for the older buildings, you're talking about something like $200, $300 for 5 years, right? For these older studio or one-bedroom units. Mm-hmm. And the latest earthquake-resistant building codes for the mansion, for the reinforced concrete blocks, was actually introduced in 1981. So anything after that, they can be checked and inspected and improved on, but they're basically all built essentially the same way. And the insurance does cover you, depending on the official valuation of the property, but the insurance does cover you for a very large part of that if and when anything happens. So we look at properties that are not older than 30 years for other reasons, which I can expand out if anyone is interested. But
yeah, I am. Please explain it later too.
Okay, so we normally don't look at properties that are older than 30, maybe 31 years old, but not because of earthquake. So the reason we do that is because starting from next year, there's a new legislation coming in, and the details are still a bit vague and unclear, so we don't know exactly what it's going to include, but there's going to be a new legislation enacted which will force owner unions, because all of these, when you buy an individual condo unit in a co-owned block, it means that each of the units is, or at least most of the units are owned by separate owners. So there's an owner's union that needs to manage the buildings and organize inspections and renovations and repairs and so forth. And some of these, especially for the older buildings, have not been managing the buildings very well. So the new legislation is meant to avoid, to prevent cases where these buildings are being neglected and they look terrible. They're an eyesore when people pass down the street, and they're also sometimes unsafe. So what they said they're going to do is they're going to put in a system where buildings that are managed properly are going to get a compliance certificate for a well-managed building. And buildings that don't comply with the new regulations will not get that certificate. And again, we don't know the exact details of what those compliance requirements are going to include, but we're assuming that it's quite possible that one of two things will happen. Either the owner union will step up to the task and start doing everything that needs to be done to comply with the new regulations and get the certificate, in which case they're probably going to have to raise monthly building fees quite significantly, which some of them haven't done in many years. Or on the other hand, they might choose not to apply for the certificate, and in that case, the property will lose its value a lot faster compared to other properties that do have the certificate. So until all of those details are clear, and to prevent our customers from losing their value very rapidly or losing the yield very rapidly if the building fees suddenly start shooting up, we're recommending to them not to go for buildings that are older than 30 years, because that new legislation is supposed to apply to buildings 40 years and older. And as you approach that 40-year mark, other investors who might be interested in purchasing the property from you will already be thinking about that. And their market price will already, their offer prices will already reflect that if you're getting closer to that 40-year mark. So if you're going to be buying a property and you can only get really 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 years of reasonable returns, and then you have to start thinking about quickly selling it, it's just a situation that we don't want our clients to be in. So again, we're recommending at the moment not to buy anything older than 30, 31 years old, at least until the details on that one are clear.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, but can I have your contacts, like, somewhere? Because, yeah, there are so many details I want to ask when I decide to do it. And, of course, I don't want to do it, like, in a public chat.
Yeah, of course. If you click on our profiles, on our pictures, then you'll get the you'll get our profile with the contact information. We've all got Instagram and Twitter. Some of us, I've got LinkedIn on there as well. So whichever way you want to contact us is fine.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I have to leave now. I have to work now. It was nice to talk to you. I will follow you and keep in contact later. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Svetlana. Thank you very much. If anyone else has a question, feel free to raise your hand and you can come up on stage and ask us a question about real estate. Otherwise, if not, I am happy to close out this room a little bit earlier than usual. Oh, hold on, we do have someone.
Yeah, Aya, how are you?
Hello.
Hello, everyone. Actually, I have one question. What kind of question can you ask here?
Oh, it's the Russian room today. You're Russian too.
Yep. Another beautiful Russian woman. Hello.
Hello.
Always welcome. Ask any question you like, real estate related.
Anything about Japan, yeah?
You can try, but I'm not sure we can answer everything.
About real estate in Japan, yeah.
Okay, give me a second, maybe a minute. I need to think about it. So,
it is the real estate room. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, while you think about the question, I do want to sort of touch on what Matt does, which is interesting. I guess for people in this room and also for people on the podcast. So Matt, if you want to explain a little bit more about Akia, I do find that quite interesting and there's not a lot of information.
So, briefly
jump in.
It's interesting. We were just talking about insurance and stuff. I guess that's certainly something to consider when looking into Akia. Akia, for those who don't know, are the not always free, but sometimes free abandoned or vacant or otherwise unused houses that you often see mentioned in various articles from, you know, CNN or the BBC or Japan Times or whatever. And so my company, Akia and Inaka, deals specifically with these Akia frequently in Inaka, aka rural Japan, but not necessarily. Akia occur everywhere. They're in Tokyo, they're out of Tokyo, they're nationwide. And so the story thus far has kind of been not very well managed in that you frequently just see either, you know, usually it's a foreign couple bought what I think it was for a song and a dance is what the most recent, I think it was a CNN article said, but they don't really give you any details at all about how the hell they did it. Or you hear strangely negative, like overly negative articles about the entire Akia problem, which is what the government calls it, saying that all Akia are absolute monsters, they're garbage, they should be judiciously destroyed, and don't even think about buying them. And so what my company, Akia and Inaka, does is we dig into that narrative, and it turns out that while a lot of them are indeed garbage and should totally be demolished, not all of them are. It's like many things in Japan, there's kind of the accepted story and then there's the actual reality, and the reality itself is relatively difficult to access. And so kind of, in fact, one reason I'm quiet right now is I've got a client I'm talking to. We basically go from zero all the way through to purchase And one of the major parts of the kind of customer client journey is the research behind it and whether or not you actually want to buy this thing. Just like with any other property, be it a new build or something in Tokyo and Ginza or whatever, you need to do your due diligence, especially when you're talking about abandoned buildings, right? And so we, you know, determine what their, you know, acceptability and search parameters are. Using those, we're able to develop possible portfolios of possible properties. That's a lot of keys. I'm sorry about that. From there, conducting due diligence, speaking with municipal offices. Frequently, there's a lot of detective work that needs to be done in tracking down physical documentation of said properties. But at the end of the day, when you're talking about a $20,000, $30,000, not just building, but the land that comes with it in, you know, right next to a river or whatever. The additional fees on top of that, let's just double the price for the sake of what I'm saying right now, and let's double that to 60,000. You're still paying 60,000 US for what we can determine is a structurally sound, viable thing to live in or conduct your business out of, and things like this. So the Akiya market, and really rural Japan in general, is kind of rife with opportunity right now, and especially since the fourth wave, the fifth, I kind of lost count.
Let's not count that.
That what last Friday, I guess, was kind of went into effect. We've also seen an uptick in people requesting our services to, you know, get out of the city, basically. So yeah, I'm losing my wind on that one, but if you got any questions, happy to answer.
So, guys, I want to say thank you for this room, for this club. Actually, I understand my question, not about real estate, actually. So, I don't know. It's close to real estate, actually.
We're all in business, too. So, if you got any business or investment-related questions generally, we can probably help as well, even though it's not the subject.
Okay. No, I think my question not right for this room. Sorry, guys, and thank you.
No problem. So, Emil, maybe do a quick last reset of the room. Just we had a couple of people join, so maybe just so they know that this is the real estate room.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, people, for joining. Yeah, this is the Foreigner's Guide to Buying Real Estate in Japan. So, if you have any questions about the real estate purchase process or buying either your personal home or investment properties or Akiya, the abandoned properties in rural areas, myself, Ziv, or Matt are all in the real estate game, and we can help answer your questions. But please, if you do have any questions, feel free to push the hand raise icon and come up. And we've got Dylan. Hey, mate. Let's bring you up to speak. Anyone else, feel free to push the hand raise icon. You can come up to speak. Dylan, how are you doing, buddy?
I am doing great. I just found you here in the clubhouse selling property. I'm looking for a building. Trying to buy something, and the timing is perfect. I didn't know this is the world you are in. Outstanding.
Yes.
So you guys actually know each other regardless of real estate. That's refreshing.
Oh no! We met on Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Not in this context.
Yeah, I think we've just been in multiple rooms. Tokyo and Japan based rooms and language rooms.
Right.
So spoken to each other. I think we're in there. Yep.
So I've never been in a room led by you. So this is very cool. Great to see you here.
Cool. Yeah, it's good to have you on. Thank you. Okay, so what's your question? Specifically, what's your question? What would you like and what can we answer?
I would like to buy a building somewhere in Chigasaki area. I'll live on the top floor. I'll make the first floor a cafe. I'll put offices in the perhaps second floor, and the third and fourth floor are residential. So mixed-use building. I'm trying to find for finance and then move on that. I'm starting from zero. I've never done this before. I've owned property in the U.S. I've looked at property.
I'm very happy to hear you mention Chigasaki.
Yep, that's where I'm trying to go. Chigasaki area is the target.
Yeah, that's an excellent spot. It comes up a lot in conversation about, you know, you can talk about outside of Tokyo, but the fact is Japan's an entire country. It's very large. And so the spread of, for once, not coronavirus, but people. you know, it'll take time, it'll be step by step and things like that. So Chigasaki is actually one of the cities that comes up pretty frequently in conversations about, like, okay, if I'm going to leave Tokyo for business or pleasure, you know, to move or anything like that, Chigasaki is one of the spots that pops up often. So it's good to hear you talking about that.
Well, I went to check it out last weekend, so I jumped on the train 2 hours down from where I live.
Okay.
It was an easy train ride. They've got this great Shonan Shinjuku line. It takes you, you sit, you get work done, and then you show up there. The mall, they had a great mall down there next to one of the stations that really brought in people. And then I went down to the beach. I checked out basically the whole area.
The beach is phenomenal.
I'm just looking at the stats now. It actually, it actually looks like the city is growing, which is which is rare in Japan.
All the people from Tokyo, who you've just mentioned, relocating. So all the old properties are being knocked down and rebuilt. So if you go there now, it's nothing but people knocking down buildings and trying to build into that. And so I'm in a, the timing is terrible if you think about it. As people are trying to compete for properties, I'm trying to move in. And so my luck, either it's bad luck or good luck. I don't know which one yet.
Well, I'll let Emil, preach on the financing aspect, and then I might jump in and talk about the investment aspect.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I was going to mention that. Chigasaki, Fujisawa Chigasaki has always been like a prime location for people that, you know, do need access to Tokyo, but want to live closer to the beach because it is like one or two trains, 90 minutes. And I know people that live in Fujisawa area and they commute daily to Tokyo. And for me, it feels a bit far, but it's still definitely doable. So yeah, that's why, and especially now because there's less frequency, like the need to go to the office is only once a week or once every 2 weeks. They can justify being further because you're only commuting 1 or 2 days, or just even like 3 or 4 days a month, if that. But they get to stay near the beach and have a bigger place. So, yeah, it's definitely a place that's now, I guess, a bit more popular because of the COVID situation. In terms of financing, right, you say you want to live on the top floor. So, in general, when you have a mixed-purpose building that's like part rental or, in this case, you know, part cafe or restaurant and part residential, in general, if you want to get access to home loan financing and home loan rates, you need at least 50%, so 50 or 51%, plus needs to be residential. And the other, you know, 49% needs or less needs to be for investment. So what's a common situation is a two-story building, your residence is the second floor, and the first floor might have 3 or 4 1K apartments in it, and that is still eligible as a home to get a home loan and home financing. However, what you said, it seems like you're going to have maybe one apartment in. It's going to be a lot less than 50% is what your primary residence is going to be. So in that case, you'll need to go straight up with a investment loan, and that's so. I can't talk much about investment loans, but what I am going to say is since you're going the investment loan route and not the home loan route, don't limit yourself to thinking that you need to live on the first floor or on one of the floors, right? Because it's not going to make much difference with financing. Think of it purely as. I would suggest maybe think of it purely as a place for like investment. If there's a room in there that's suitable for you to also live in yourself, then that's great. But in terms of financing, the whole thing won't be eligible for home loan rates and home loan financing because less than 50% sounds like will be your primary residence.
Interesting. Well, this is insights I did not have. Remember, this is the pipe dream. Let's get moving on it. And I'm trying to do this in the next 5 to 10 days. So I don't have a bank yet. I don't have anything yet. But I realized if you don't move, you keep dreaming. Dreams never come true. You have to move on them. When I tried to develop property in Japan previously, I couldn't get the numbers to work out. It just was too hard trying to build from scratch. So now I've changed gear, now I'm looking at used. That was 12 years ago, 8 years ago, 2010, whatever year that was.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Matt unmute his mic. I'll let him jump in. But one thing I do want to say as well is also in terms of financing, look at local banks. So yeah. Maybe there's a local bank in Chigasaki one of the small banks or small youth credit unions. They may be more helpful with financing than a place like, you know, SMBC.
Yeah, Sudogan Kanagawa banks Shizuoka Bank are definitely kind of strike a decent balance between kind of the SMBCs and then also the hyperlocal ones. Usually, Tsuruga, Shizuoka, hyperlocal banks, they're much more open to doling out loads of cash, as it were. They will tend to be a little bit higher, we're talking like between 3 and 5%, so far as what you're going to have to be paying on top of that is concerned. But it is, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Idiosyncratic, like it's case by case kind of thing. So you kind of don't know until you start digging.
Any people you recommend in specific at those banks?
People? No, they're all going to be the same. And to be honest, you know, unless you have, you're rubbing shoulders with the leaders of, you know, like Mitsubishi or Sumitomo or anything like that, any kind of doesn't matter who you know, they're going to be a bank. They're going to be dealing with you like a customer.
Okay. And then on the investment versus home loan, which is the faster, easier route? For example, and because I hadn't put any thought into this, I found your room by accident as I'm in this mode. So I'm literally, even though I'm a three-year-old.
Serendipity.
I'm a three-year-old. I'm the three-year-old who suddenly wants to go fly an airplane. You're like, dude, you don't even know how to walk yet.
Doesn't matter.
I'm like, no, it doesn't matter. I want to fly.
That's what the show's about.
As markets go, Japan is probably one of the safest and more forgiving places to get into the property market, I'd say.
Really? So would it make more sense, just bear with me for a second here, if I'm on high speed, and what started this whole thing is I'm in a rental unit, it's pretty expensive, and they just hit me with the Koshindyo, and I'm like, you guys are idiots, you treat me like shit. The place is a crap, and you want me to pay a cushion? I'm like, well, fix all these things first, and I'll think about paying your stupid fee there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've asked for 2 years for these things to be repaired. I feel like I'm in a danchi. The danchi is cleaner than this place.
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposedly Kokyu Mansion, supposedly the upper crust. You know, we've got all the Maseratis and the BMs out there in the parking lot. Everyone's fancy. But the building's not fancy. So I'm like, screw it.
Yep.
Let me just go and buy a place in Chigasaki. Stay out of this rat race, be by the beach. Oh, and while I'm doing that, I know a company that is looking for a place for their office. Oh, I know somebody wants a coffee shop. Why don't I just do it all at once? Oh, wait a minute. Listening to you guys, maybe just do the
Dylan,
residential first.
FYI, yep. That's exactly what I did. I was living in Hamamatsucho, paying all sorts of cash for, you know, small kind of POS apartment, this, that, and the other thing, and kind of everything came together, and it's like, you know what, fuck it. I like being down in the east. I'm near Atami, right? I moved to Atami last year.
Yeah.
In a gigantic, what is an ex-corporate retreat, mountaintop in the forest, but also overlooking the ocean, like 20 minutes to the beach.
Everything in Atami looks over the ocean. What are you talking about, man? The place is awesome.
I know, it's great. Right? So your dream's totally doable is what I'm trying to tell you.
Well, I like it. So here's where I'm going after this is I'm literally, you know, it's Golden Week and I want to go out and get a loan from a bank. Ooh, that's not a good time. That's when everyone shuts down. Because I have to pay this stupid fee like today or tomorrow they want me to pay. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not interested in doing this.
Well, you're not going to walk out of the bank with a loan, though. It'll take them a bit longer than that.
I know that. That's why I'm throwing out this. It's a Hail Mary pass if you play American football. Or maybe I just double down and go, you know what, screw you, I'm moving. And then I just have to figure out how to do it in 2 months.
So let me give you my general suggestion. So my general response to your situation. And just to quickly sort of reset. So I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo. And my focus is on like foreigners or often like mixed families purchasing their own family home in Tokyo. Okay. So generally it's like, you know, like people like myself, it'll be a foreign husband or wife and with a Japanese spouse, or maybe both are foreign. And they've been here long term and they think it's time to buy a place. Maybe they've got kids or maybe not. But usually it's, you know, people looking to just reside permanently in Japan and buy their own place. Now, it's quite common people say, look, for example, your rent is 200,000 yen a month. And you go, man, what people say, look, we're in April now. So it's April now, and people say, look, in August my lease renewal. I want to buy a house before then because I don't want to pay the 200,000 yen or 100,000 yen caution of your renewal fee, right? My general response to that is don't decide a $500,000 or $1 million purchase on saving 200,000 yen, okay? If you find the right property before August, before your renewal period, fine. Go ahead and try to make the move before that time. But if you don't find the right property, pay the 200,000 yen renewal. Take your time, find the right property. Okay, because buying the wrong property or the not perfect property is not worth the 200,000 yen you've saved in renewal fee. That's my general approach.
You will almost certainly end up paying far, far more than that to fix the problems that you didn't see.
Yeah.
Oh, or you just don't like the property. It was good to climb to the top of the mountain to get your sage words of wisdom.
For sure.
Right. Now, the other thing I'm going to say is that it's also quite common for people to think, you know, investment property or personal home. Which one should I do? Generally, in most cases, the investment property people are considering is not as substantial as a potential personal home. So, If people are looking to buy their own personal home, maybe they're looking at 50 million to 100 million yen, so 500,000 to $1 million, right, is kind of the budget in Tokyo if you're looking for a house, a property, is pretty common. If they're looking for an investment, they're looking for something, you know, maybe one-third of that or a quarter of that. The problem is, you know, if you purchase an investment property for 20 or 30 million yen, even though it's an investment, it will, and then later you decide, look, I want to get a home loan. The bank will say, look, you've already got an investment property. You've already got a loan, a mortgage. This impacts negatively your ability to get the full financing you would like for a home loan. Right? So what happens is, you know, people want, maybe one of them, they want a holiday house or like some sort of, you know, in Nagano that they can put on Airbnb, and it'll cost them, you know, 15 million yen, so $150,000. They'll buy that, they'll get some investment loan or whatnot and put 15 million yen into that. And then when they want to get their personal home in Japan, in Tokyo, the bank says, you know, you've only got a 15 million yen loan. So instead of giving you 80 million, we're only going to give you 65 million for your property in Tokyo. And you're like, well, that's not enough. Okay, so sometimes, so what I generally tell people is get the more expensive property first and then decide on your smaller investment loan. Don't let the cheaper investment loan take away your ability to purchase your primary home. One of the big reasons for that is the primary home loan, primary residence home loan, the jutaka loan, the bank will give you 100% or 105% financing. So that's a full purchase price of the property, plus maybe even 5% of closing costs. The bank will pay the whole thing, and the interest rate is like 0.7%. Okay? An investment loan is not that good. So by having an investment loan, you kind of waive your ability to get this great home loan deal. So that's my take. Secure your primary residence first and then consider the investment. In your case, it feels a little bit tricky. I think, you know, you're still brainstorming ideas. You know, the fact that you want to do a cafe and some residential properties, like basically it's an investment structure, that you also live in? Is it necessary that you also live in it, right? I feel that that could have been an idea you came to just because you thought I can get one home loan and use part of my house for like there's a cafe and some investment.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, and that's not exactly actually doable, right? So what may be a more realistic approach in terms of leveraging bank finance at the best rates and getting the most amount of money with the least outlay and least interest, you know, even if you want to be in Chigasaki, okay, buy a personal home in Chigasaki and nearby, you know, set up a KK, get a corporate loan to set up a restaurant and B&B or small little rental places, right? Think of them as two separate approaches, two separate structures, because I don't think you're going to be able to do what you want, get the financing that you want if you want to put it all in one sort of building.
Also, I would say like too, another thing that's very specific to what I work with, which is the Akian stuff, is usually when you're talking about financing, you usually want to be above at least 10 million yen. We've ran into, I wouldn't call it a problem because it's so cheap, but you know, we've sold houses and various types of properties for, you know, say 3.5 million. And when you have something that low, the bank looks at you just like, what the hell are you coming to us for? Right. So there's definitely kind of a price, a floor price minimum that you're also going to want to keep in mind.
3.5 million. What are you buying? A shanty? A toilet?
Oh, no. These are huge, huge houses. This one that I'm thinking of right now, that was 3.3, actually. We got it down from 5.5, but that one's out in Gunma. But that was a full two-story, I think it was 600 square meters and like 1,200, I think, square for the the property, like the land, was over 1,000, and the house itself was, I think, 600. I'd have to look at her numbers again.
Or a pretty high-yielding investment condo unit in, not in Tokyo and Osaka, but in many other cities, $3.5 million is very doable.
Yeah, that's why Chigasaki is also attractive, because those prices, like once you get that far out of the city, the prices do start falling.
I wish I'd known this 2 years ago when I actually had money in my bank account. So.
And for anyone who's not in Japan, $3.5 million is roughly the equivalent of $32,000-$33,000 US. So it sounds like millions, but it's not.
Yeah. You could buy like a kind of not shitty car for that.
But the deposit on my house in Hawaii was $250,000. The deposit, you know, not the loan. I had to pay that in just to get the loan for just a single family home.
Yeah, right. That's absurd.
So.
What have I been doing, man? Where have you guys been all my life?
Clubhouse. We're here every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. So just to give you a bit of an idea with the home loans in Japan versus other countries, I'm Australian. In Australia, it's almost always 20% deposit. You need to put 20% down payment and the bank will finance 80%. In Japan, when it's your primary residence, right, a Jutaku loan, the bank will give you 100% or 105% financing. And the interest rate is like, we just did a contract with at a bank, at Shinsei Bank yesterday. It was yesterday. It was Prestia. And 0.67%. is the interest rate, which is just a great deal. And that's why I say the most value you can get in terms of leveraging finance and investment, we talk about rental yields and whatnot, I feel the number one deal you can do immediately is purchase your own home because you are your own tenant. Everything you're paying, so let's say you use a 70 million yen loan, for example, on a Nanasenma, 70 million yen loan, so $700,000, is about 200,000 yen a month. Of that, about 85% is principal, right? So if you're, instead of paying 200,000 yen a month for rent, right? It's like over the life of the loan.
3 years ago when I knew this information, I didn't plan on staying in Japan to begin with.
May I ask you something? Because I really like that logic you have thinking. You have to first buy your own home, like, and then invest in some other properties. But I was thinking that, you know, I was looking for some for my own home, so I was looking for the perfect opportunity, the perfect home for my children to grow up. And then while looking at it, you know, five years passed. So within these 5 years, I could have invested some, you know, I could have taken a loan and invested in some properties that I don't want to live in.
I totally agree with that, by the way. Emil will give you his own spiel on purchasing for the long term, but I think that's a very valid point.
Extremely.
But I realized that right, you know, like 5 days ago, that, damn, 5 years ago, I wanted, you know, buy a house. I couldn't because there was nothing you could, you know, think, you know, imagine yourself living in. And within that time, I could have maybe invested and bought a cheap house that I could have, you know, rented to someone, and it could have, maybe half of it could have paid off already.
Exactly.
But for that,
I'm going to, like, so that, those numbers don't work out. So in 5 years, they're not paying off half. But what I will say, right?
Of course, you're right.
Not these days, by the way, but up until 5 years ago, it was definitely still possible. Now prices have gone up. No, but when we started working, Emil, we had properties that covered themselves within 8 years too.
That's an investment side of thing, right? But so one thing you need to remember is, okay, when you talk about investing versus primary residence, here's my take on it. The people say you have to decide one or the other. You don't, right? When you buy your personal home, there's not really a lot of opportunity cost. You don't miss out on an opportunity. Let's say you have 10 million yen of cash savings. It doesn't really matter, because when you buy a personal home, the bank will pay for everything. You don't need to use your 10 million yen of cash. You can then later use after you buy a personal home, you can later use your 10 million yen of cash to buy that investment property if you want to buy it outright. That's fine. Okay, but so it's kind of unrelated, almost. But what I was saying before in terms of the loan is, okay, when you have a 0.7% interest rate, which is what current home loans are, the standard loan term is 35 years. Over a 35-year term at 0.7%, you're going to repay back about 15% of the total property value into as interest. So if you buy a 70 million yen property, okay, at the end of 35 years, you've paid the bank 80 million yen. That's a total of about 10 million yen of extra interest cost, which is actually tiny. Okay, what that equates to is about 15% of the total value. Whereas in Australia, when interest rate is 4 to 7%, you're paying double. If you buy a $700,000 property, you've paid $1.4 million to the bank at the end of it. Okay, so when I say the interest rate is so low, it's instead of paying rent, you're basically paying off your loan. So every year, if it's 200,000 yen a month is you're paying on the mortgage on a 70 million yen loan, your mortgage is going down 2 million yen per year. Right? So in 10 years' time, that's 20 million yen, $200,000 that you've paid off your mortgage. And you can't get a better deal than that, because
but then there's the Akia. I mean,
yeah,
I
depends on your definition of deal. I was gonna say.
because you have to remember, right? So in terms of what's the cost, the banks paid all of it. You can because now you have a 10 million yen asset, right? Sorry, a 70 million yen asset. Right, and look, people that are looking to buy a 70 million yen property aren't looking to also live in Akiya. It's a different kind of approach. So, look, yeah, if someone's looking to live in Akiya, then yes, that's what you want. But you're not going to be looking for a 70 million yen property and then think, oh, no, nah, I'd rather buy just the Akiya. I think it's a different kind of clientele.
Sure, it can be. Just anecdotally speaking, I know any number of people who have picked up, you know, between, usually it's between like 2 and like you said, 7, or 7, not 70 million yen spots. There's a lot of B&B stuff, cafes, things like that. They've paid, and of course they're buying in cash. There's no financing involved most of the time. And they're paying off, like the buildings are covering themselves, generally I would say within about 2 years. Of course, like you said, it's a different clientele, right? And it's really kind of a different world in a sense. But there are kind of alternative options out there that what we've seen thus far, you know, they end up bringing in money. It just doesn't look like what the business normally looks like, if you know what I mean.
I would just to give you guys a rough idea on the investment properties that are available. So they're starting from around, depending on the city, so prefectural capitals and not secondary cities like Fukuoka or Nagoya, but third-tier cities like Kumamoto, Hiroshima, and so forth. Properties start at about 2 million yen, so about 20,000 US, and to get the cash cows that would really generate the highest possible yields, you would usually cap it off by about 8 million yen. In Tokyo and Osaka, you'd maybe go as far as 12 million yen for a cash cow. And they will generate, again, depending on the city, anywhere from, we usually don't look much below 5%. So let's say as a minimum 5%, you can get something that'll generate less yield, but it's not very attractive. Anywhere from 5% to about 9% net pre-tax per annum. So including all of your purchase and known running costs, but not including your individual tax situation and not including unknowns like maintenance and vacancies and so forth. So we can make assumptions on those, but basically net pre-tax anywhere from 5 to 9%, and you can buy in pretty cheap. So if your budget is 100K, for example, you could get two or three of those if you want more diversity.
Yeah, but see, you need 10 million yen of cash to buy a 10 million yen property.
Yeah, strictly cash.
I'm saying you need almost zero cash to buy a 70 million yen property.
Right? Yeah, not as an argument against getting a loan for your family home. I'm just explaining what sort of investment properties are available. So like you said, if you get 100% financing for your home loan and you've still got that 100,000 US to play with, that's what you can get.
Yeah, and that's why I say you can, for almost no money down, you can get seven times your annual income. So if you earn about 10 million yen a year, gross, you're a salary man, the bank will give you about 70 million, right? So the bank will give you 100% financing. You now own a 70 million yen asset. And then if you still have that 10 million yen cash, right, or 15 million cash, you can go do the investment route that Ziv and Matt are talking about, or probably even less money. But you just signing your name on a piece of paper, you go from no longer paying rent, which you're still going to need to do, right, to owning your property, okay? And that's why I think do it. That's the best deal because the bank is paying for it and charging you very little in terms of interest. And you are now, instead of paying your rent, you now own the property. And then, yeah, if you want to do something else and invest your money in an Akiya or a different type of investment, you can do that. But I feel that's the very high yield, like, because basically you go to getting 200,000 yen a month of rent, which is your own savings. I don't think any of that, like, with no money contribution or very little money contribution, there's nothing else you can do with such little money contribution that's going to get you, you know, 200,000 yen, in my example of rent.
Yeah, absolutely.
A month. That's a month.
So interesting on this discussion. It's almost a benefit to go with the larger space than to go with a giddy just good enough. And your thoughts on transactions you've seen in the past for that? If you're getting, if it's your primary residence at such low interest rate, you're actually going to hurt yourself if you go with a smaller number, unless you're talking about resale value, which is fairly low here in Japan. Your thoughts on that?
Well, resale value is, it depends where you purchase. The building depreciates, not the land. Okay, so if you're in a good location, then yeah, there's a floor price for the land value, the location value. If the building depreciates, and depending on the structure, it has anywhere from like, you know, a 20 to 40 year life, by accounting standards. But I tell people, when you're looking for your own personal home, it's where do you want to raise your family, you know, for the other person on stage. I'm not sure if that's your name or what I meant to, how I meant to pronounce it. Further, what your thing says. But yeah, like it's where you want to raise your family. So there's a lot more to it. Not, it's about your lifestyle, where you want to live, not purely an investment play when it's your own personal home.
And so the last piece is, when I went to go purchase the home previously, and I was looking at investment, all the things I looked at, got the bank, got everything lined up. One of the comments they mentioned was age is important when getting a loan in Japan, because we don't want loans to go beyond 80 years of age. I'm now 52, and so that weighs in on my decision. Your insights on working with the banks?
Yeah, so that's, it's a very straightforward calculation. I said earlier, standard loans in Japan are 35 years term. Okay, you can get it shorter. You don't really get it longer for a home loan, for your jutaku loan. But once you turn, it's maximum of 35 years, or it must be paid off by your 80th birthday. So once you turn 45, then the loan term will decrease. The maximum loan term will decrease to 34 years. And as you get older, it turns 32. So in your case, if you're 52, so by your 80th birthday, you have 28, probably 27 years. If you're 52, 27 years is the maximum loan term you're able to get. Now, when the bank calculates your repayments, they say, look, you know, doing the most based on your income, they calculate the most you can repay is one third of your, you know, annual income to the mortgage. Let's say 200,000 yen a month is the most you can pay. They say, okay, 200,000 yen a month over a 35-year term is 70 million yen. Hold on, we can't give you a 35-year term. We can only give you a 27-year term. So 200,000 yen monthly repayments for 27 years is going to be, instead of 70 million, 40 million yen, for example. So the most you can get is only a 40-year term. A 40 million yen loan, right? Because they calculate what your maximum monthly or annual repayment capacity is based on your income. That's how they calculate it.
Interesting.
Right? So you can't say, oh, you know what? Give me my 70 million and I'm going to pay, I have to pay it back twice as fast. So instead of paying 200,000 in a month, I'm going to pay 400,000. They're going to say, no, actually 400,000 in a month is well above your financial stress limit. We give you a loan based on a 200,000 yen repayment, not a 400,000 yen repayment. So the most you can pay, 200,000 yen. If you're under 45, great. We'll calculate that out for 35 years. But in your case, they're going to calculate 200,000 yen a month for only 27 years.
So there's my ceiling. Good calculation insight.
Yeah. Okay, so
that's the after tax number they're using, not the before tax.
It's gross, but it depends if you're a salaried employee or a business owner. But in general, if you're just a straight up salary man, say Shaiin, then they'll look at your gross. If you're a business owner, then it's a bit different. They look at your net sort of profit after your expenses and depreciation, etc. And they'll also look at and if you're a business owner, then they'll also generally want they'll want 20% deposit. There are some banks, some situations we can do where we can still get you 100% financing, but it does depend on sort of your residency, if you're a permanent resident or not, if your spouse is Japanese or not, how long your business has been operating and so forth.
A bit of an offset to that, Dylan, is your investment properties, if you do end up purchasing any investment property in cash, you're carrying your purchase costs forward for 3 years. So for the first 3 years, you're probably not going to be paying much tax on them. But from the fourth year onwards, they're going to be factored in as income. So that does increase your income for those calculations as well. So it does offset the your age limit a little bit.
This has been an amazing session. I've got a work meeting happening in 20 minutes. But this has been probably my most important meeting in the past 2 years.
We're here every Wednesday.
So every Wednesday, I didn't know
Good to hear. Good luck concentrating in that meeting, by the way.
I can parsley things out. Basically, my next shot is just run down to Chigasaki, get to know the neighborhoods, and see what's up and what's not.
Yeah, if you're interested in digging around possibilities, get in touch. We'd be happy to see if we can dig up anything for you.
All right, well, I'll just shout an email, text off to Matt. I'm sorry, to email. I'll send you as well here, Matt.
Sure, no, I got it.
You guys work together, you guys separate here.
Separate?
No, can I ask a question?
Sorry, can you just tell, yeah, you can just give us 1 second, and we'll just wrap up with Dylan, and then we'll jump onto Perth for a sec, and see what he has to say, and then Askari will go to you, if that's okay. So just briefly, yeah, we are separate, but we all deal with different sort of businesses, so that's why we think we have a good, we're amongst the three of us, we can probably answer a lot of your questions.
Yeah, quick reset again, maybe, Amir.
Sure. Okay, but yeah, Dylan, do please reach out. We'll get on the phone and discuss.
Your insights here for free on this Clubhouse app are priceless, and access to this kind of information is such a quick trip.
Dylan, if you want to get it offline, click on my profile. There's a podcast that we put out every week that's got a lot of this information in it as well, so you don't actually have to be live on Clubhouse.
I love that. You guys probably saw the phone thing show up on my profile there, right?
I did not, actually. I didn't see it.
Do you have the updated version of
I do, Clubhouse, but it's not working for some reason. I was just saying there's a I do a weekly podcast on all things Japan real estate, but specifically investment usually. So if you want to listen offline to some and there's a lot of topics, if you scroll down the episode list, a lot of basic topics that you might want to listen to as well.
Oh, Ziv, all right. Ziv, I give you a follow as well. Run over and see how I grab people on here. Japan real estate, you follow here and message.
Alrighty. Thanks so much for your question.
I'm all good. Thanks so much. I'll be on stage just taking notes over here before my meeting. Press on with your room. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks. Let's move to Fer and then Askari. Jump to your questions. And just a very brief reset. Yeah, thank you everyone for jumping on. If you have any questions about real estate in Japan, either personal home and home loans, investment properties, or Akiya, the abandoned homes in the regional areas, please do push the hand raise icon, and myself, Ziv, and Matt will be happy to answer your question. We'll go on to Fer next, and then Askari.
It's all right. Question. Well, basically, you answered all my questions since I last time I participated in the topic. But little small off topic question. By which we are having a talk. My cousin moved about half a year ago to Japan, to Yokohama. He's living there right now, and he's planning to live there because he followed his the love of his life to Japan, which is she's Japanese. He's from Turkey. I'm living in Germany and working here, so completely different countries. And he's right about learning Japanese and improving his skills. If you have any, shouldn't be a decent job, but for beginners, something that helps him learning Japanese while working. I would be glad if you have some tips where he can start.
He should follow Dylan, the guy who was just up here having speaking. Dylan knows a lot. He runs a regular room about Japanese language learning. But there are lots on Clubhouse about that. But I think in terms of that's a topic for a different room, and we can get into that.
I was going to say, Fear, he can help you. He can help you search for investment properties on the Japanese property websites. That's a good way to brush up his Japanese.
Yeah, that would be nice. I thought you could learn while having an internship, especially in the real estate market. So, that would add up to the plan of doing such business as you.
Well, hit me up with a follow and send me a message. I'll see if there's something that we can help him with. I don't know if it'll be a paid internship, but we can give him some tasks that'll help him if he wants to practice.
Great. He doesn't need money. He just needs practice.
Yeah, no worries. Hit me up and I'll see what we can do for him.
Thanks, Bill. Askari, thank you for holding out. Sorry I can get to you sooner. Please shoot ahead with your question. And am I pronouncing your name right, Askari?
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah, so I know there's like a declining population in Japan, so I'm really curious. It sounds like the loans are at or near 0%. I came in late. And they have more variable terms in the United States. Is that correct? For like length of term?
Well, the term is 35 years. I'm not sure what the term length is in the U.S. Are you in Japan, actually, or are you just curious about it?
I've been to Japan. I mean, I've been looking at doing more real estate investment. So I was just curious, like, how does the loan structure work to where you're putting down so little and the bank's still getting the return?
The investment loans are totally different, though. He was talking about home loans.
Okay.
Yeah, so in Japan, primary, like if it's for your primary residence, you get a special deal. It's like, you know, no money down, 100% financing, and the bank and the interest rates are very low, but it's for your primary residence. You cannot do that for multiple properties, right? Because then there'll be an out-of-control bubble, right? Everyone will be doing it. It's only for one property. If you want to change your property and get another home, the bank will want you to sell your first home. You can't or change one of them to an investment loan. And generally, an investment loan is 20 to 40% deposit and 2 to 4% interest rates. Not nearly as attractive as the previous one. And you can't use the equity in your home loan, like built-up equity, as kind of a deposit or mortgage for the next investment. So it limits it because of that. It controls sort of the out-of-control investment, like buying, etc.
But as we were telling Dylan before, you can definitely, I mean, for the amount of cash deposit that you'd normally put down for a house in the US, like he was saying, $250,000 for his Hawaii home, for that amount, you'll be buying 3 or 4 investment properties in Japan in cash.
Oh, really? Like, I mean, I've only been to, say, like the urban parts in Kamakura, so I'm not familiar with like Japan as a whole.
Well, Japan urban is not just Tokyo, though. Japan urban is a lot of big cities aside from Tokyo and Osaka. So Tokyo and Osaka prices are probably similar to what you're used to from other countries around the world. But Nagoya, Fukuoka, Kyoto, Sapporo, and the prefectural capitals like Saitama, Kumamoto, etc., they're much, much, much cheaper.
Okay. And so what are sort of like the rental rates that you would see if you're in, say, one of those prefectural cities or Kyoto or some other place?
Net pre-tax, we were just saying before, I think before you joined, net pre-tax, it's depending on the location and the age and the size of the property, anywhere from 5 to maybe 9% net pre-tax per annum.
Oh, that's really nice, actually.
Yeah, and the tenants are a lot easier than what you'd be used to in the U.S., even at the low income levels.
So, like, as a foreigner, do you need a Japanese partner to purchase? I mean, I've seen videos where people are talking about, like, difficulties of renting spaces or purchasing things as foreigners in Japan.
So legally, no. Japan's actually the only country in the Asia-Pacific region that doesn't have any limitations on foreign purchases and ownership. But practically, just the professionals outside of Tokyo, Osaka, and maybe a few other international hotspots like Niseko or Okinawa, where the U.S. Army bases are, those places will have property professionals that can service foreigners. In other places, it's a lot more difficult. So that's why that's actually the niche that we operate in, is assisting the foreign buyers to buy and manage their properties by giving the Japanese side a Japanese face to deal with. So the buyers give us permission to act on their behalf, and then we contact the realtors, the property managers, the insurance companies, everybody that would be normally shy to work with foreigners, and we give them a Japanese company to deal with, and then we can bridge that gap for them. So officially, no limitations, no problem. Practically, it's a bit more challenging, yes.
All right, that's very illuminating. Thank you, Zev.
No worries. Well, that was pretty detailed and deep. Hope you've enjoyed it as much as I did. And if you'd like to jump into the conversation, we're on Clubhouse and Facebook Live every Wednesday again at 1:30 p.m. Japan Standard Time. We would love to have you with us. And as Dylan says towards the end there, there are always plenty of priceless insights and precious little nuggets of information in these conversations. And we're all always happy to talk shop, so come and join us. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you are already in Japan on some sort of a more temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, and also if you're considering setting up a local company or branch office of a foreign company, and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiry, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners and our clients. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, all one word, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating, review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, wherever you're tuning in from, or just drop us a line in the comments section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.